Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Good Monday morning, everyone. I'm Josh Hammer, and this, of course, is America on Trial, your one-stop shop for all your legal news pertaining to the 2024 presidential election and all the major pressing legal headlines affecting our country and our American way of life. What a day it is for America on Trial here on today's show. Of course, our deep dive is going to be a visit to the New York City courtroom of Justice Juan Merchan, the first ever criminal prosecution of a former president of the United States who, oh, by the way, happens to be a current candidate for president of the United States again. That trial commences today. Our deep dive is going to update you on everything you need to know there. Then later on in the show, in today's closing arguments, we'll talk about what happened in the Middle East over the weekend, an unprecedented attack from the Islamic Republic of Iran directed at Israel, a largely unsuccessful strike. But the real question now is, what in the world is going to happen next? All of that and more later on in the show, in today's jam-packed deep dive and closing argument. But for now, as always, we begin by going around the horn. We begin in Washington, D.C., and once again, just a quick reminder that today is the deadline if Donald Trump's lawyers in the immunity case choose to respond to special counsel Jack Smith's arguments in his own brief that he filed. So to make sure we're all caught up to speed here, this oral argument is going to be at the U.S. Supreme Court in about a week and a half. It's going to be on April 25th, so mark your calendar if you have not already done so. It's a blockbuster hearing that will ultimately answer the threshold question that we're going to need to answer before we can even ascertain as to whether Jack Smith's charges against the president can proceed in the Washington, D.C. probe on so-called election interference grounds, namely whether or not Donald Trump is actually immune, whether he has immunity for the actions at issue there. I continue to think that the most likely outcome here is going to be a middle-of-the-road, fact-specific inquiry of sorts, which will ultimately get remanded to lower court for fact-finding and as it applies to the alleged facts at hand, all of which is to say that I think Donald Trump is going to get his wish in this particular case, and this thing is going to be just continually prolonged, likely until after the election. In any event, for present purposes, today is a deadline for Trump's lawyers to reply to Jack Smith's sweeping argument in his brief that takes an extraordinarily cramped and limited view of presidential immunity. We very briefly then check in Fulton County, Georgia. Just a reminder as to where things stand there. Fani Willis has responded to Trump and his co-defendant's argument that she should indeed still be dismissed, Judge Scott McAfee's order to the contrary notwithstanding. So we are awaiting at this point further word from the appellate judges that sit above Scott McAfee in the Georgia State Judiciary. We're waiting to hear from them, first of all, as to whether or not they're even going to entertain this argument. Second of all, if they do entertain the argument, of course, what will they actually choose? That is pretty much where things currently stand in Fulton County, Georgia. From Fulton County down to Fort Pierce, Florida, and the federal courtroom of Judge Aileen Cannon, just a brief update for you. There was a two-hour hearing on Friday in Judge Aileen Cannon's courtroom. This is for Donald Trump's classified documents case. You know all about this case by now. We've discussed it on this show many times. Now, it is probably the current least discussed of Donald Trump's four current criminal prosecutions, and I expect that to continue to be the case for the foreseeable future. But for present purposes, what you need to know is that Judge Aileen Cannon has essentially all but said that she's going to postpone the trial start date here. Right now, it's technically still listed as May 20th. She has not made any concrete statements about an alternative timeline, an alternative starting date for a jury selection in voir dire. And she continued to kind of beat around the bush a little bit in this two-hour hearing in her courtroom on Friday. Now, interestingly, it is worth noting that Jack Smith himself, again, the federal special counsel on this case, he has actually urged Judge Cannon to move the trial date to July 8th, which is interesting that even he would be acknowledging that this thing's not actually going to get started on May 20th. That's how you know that there's no chance it's going to get started, because even the prosecution is pushing to actually move it back. He said July 8th, the Trump legal team has been proposing a post-November start date, which makes sense. That should be their starting position. But they have indicated that they are willing to compromise with a start date sometime in August. But as of now, all you need to know is that there is no movement yet. Judge Kam is continuing to prolong this. At this point, the Trump legal strategy in so many of these proceedings, so many of these courtrooms, is something closely tantamount to running out the clock, playing stall ball, for those of you familiar with football and basketball sports rhetoric and strategy there. And this Friday in Judge Cannon's courtroom in Florida was good news, certainly, for Donald Trump. Going to Washington, D.C., just a couple of updates for you when it comes to the U.S. Capitol. We're starting to learn a little bit more about what Joe Biden's current plan is for student debt cancellation. So if you recall, there was a massive student loan, quote-unquote, forgiveness plan, upwards of $400 billion in student loan last year, and the U.S. Supreme Court was having none of that. They said that Joe Biden was on improper legal footing to attempt to quote-unquote cancel or quote-unquote forgive upwards of $400 billion of student loan debt on the statutory grounds of the HEROES Act, which is a post 9/11 statute that literally has nothing whatsoever to do, literally nothing whatsoever to do with anything remotely resembling student loan. It is a post 9/11 statute that really kind of brings to mind the old maxim, the old saying from the late great Justice Antonin Scalia, who said that Congress does not hide elephants in mouse holes, which is his way of saying that when you have a major question, what the Supreme Court now calls the major questions doctrine, you're not going to be able to find it kind of buried in an obscure statute written 20, 30 years ago in something totally unrelated. No, for major questions, Congress has to speak very clearly there. And the court very correctly held last summer that this $400 billion student loan boondoggle did not fit the bill. Well, however, Joe Biden's trying to do it again, but right now we're getting clarification that it's going to be a lot smaller in scope, at least. It's attempting to quote-unquote forgive, and I keep on using these scare quotes, quote-unquote forgive, because you know that there's no such thing as free money. Obviously, this is ultimately going to get repaid by the taxpayer, by higher interest rates, and in an inflated dollar. It's only a handful of ways that this thing can actually get paid. It's not truly, quote-unquote, forgiven. But they said that they're canceling, again, quote-unquote, canceling $7.4 billion in student debt for 277,000 borrowers. Here's how this is actually going to work. They're purporting to cancel $3.6 billion for 206,800 borrowers enrolled in the so-called SAVE plan. This is Saving on a Valuable Education. It's an income-driven repayment program. You have $3.5 billion that they're attempting to cancel for 65,700 borrowers in income repayment plans, and then an additional $300 million for 4,600 borrowers through public service loan forgiveness. Legal challenges are definitely going to pop up about this. This strikes me as a pure election year gambit by the President of the United States trying to make sure that his coveted 18 to 35-year-old voters don't go wandering too far off the proverbial reservation. And that really is what I think Joe Biden is worried about, is that he sees the Gen Z and millennial voter blocs are increasingly flirting with voting for Donald Trump. He is absolutely terrified of that. I think that's what this $7.4 billion in student debt, quote unquote, forgiveness, I think that's what this is truly all about there. That is actually what's going on here behind the scenes. Finally, a brief update for you. On Friday, the U.S. House voted to reauthorize FISA. So this was a pretty brutal back and forth legislative debate for a long time. Former President Trump had come in against the bill. He railed on Truth Social, exhorting Republicans in Congress to, quote, kill FISA. And you had a lot of back and forth as to whether or not there should be some amendments put in place on FISA surveillance. So the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act is a 1970s era statute that puts in place this somewhat legally, shall we say, less than fully kosher court, the FIS, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, which approves of government requests to spy at upwards of a 99% approval rate. The whole thing is somewhat shambolic. I think everyone would be the first to admit that. But what FISA actually does is it allows the U.S. government to engage in necessary tactics when it comes to foreign surveillance. The issue is that you've had a lot of Americans themselves who have gotten swept up in these data sweeps when it comes to trying to surveil foreigners. Well, what if the foreigner is actually in communication with an American? And you had an attempt to try to impose a warrant requirement to make sure that if you're going to get the data for any Americans caught up in the data sweep, then you're going to need a warrant for that to satisfy Fourth Amendment requirements, to satisfy just general kind of public policy concerns about the deep state getting awry. And that warrant requirement was actually narrowly defeated. It was a 212 to 212 dead heat. So therefore, it failed to pass. But in any event, the entire FISA bill did end up passing the House 273 to 147. It was only reauthorized for a couple of years. They were going to do it for 5 years. So maybe that was something of an attempt at a compromise from Speaker and Mike Johnson there. Lots of interesting arguments on both sides of FISA. I don't have super strong instincts on it myself. I share the skepticism of the deep state that I think is leading a lot of folks to come out opposed to FISA reform. The deep state has proven itself time and time again to be totally incapable of being trusted when it comes to these sort of tools. However, we have a massive open borders immigration problem, a massive failure to vet the migrants coming into this country problem. We have a massive metastasis of Islamic Jihad problem, and I do genuinely worry about having the tools necessary to spot out and deter and ultimately prevent various atrocities as well. It's a difficult call, and in any event, FISA has passed the House, again, 273 to 147. Well, that's it for today's Around the Horn segment. Up next in today's deep dive, this is it, folks. We're crossing the Rubicon today with Alvin Bragg in New York City. What is going on in the courtroom of Justice Juan Merchan? Stay with us. You'll have all the details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back. It's time for today's deep dive. And where else but to New York City? Today is the day, folks. On Friday, you had Justice Juan Merchan reject for the final time yet another attempt by Donald Trump and his lawyers to delay the commencement of the hush money case involving Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels there in New York City. Their final attempt was a pre-motion letter seeking to adjourn this case based on, quote, alleged prejudicial pretrial publicity. So their final attempt to delay the case was essentially an argument that Donald Trump is systematically incapable of getting a fair trial in this case due to the fact that there has been so much pretrial publicity and that there's so much media attention on this and so forth that he's just not going to get a fair trial. They had previously attempted to delay it based on the nature of the gag order because they were appealing the fact that Manhattan is inherently biased jurisdiction. They were trying to move it to Staten Island and other grounds as well, involving, of course, the effort to get Judge Merchan himself to recuse himself due to his family's, shall we say, compromised ties to Donald Trump. That, of course, being Lauren Merchan, his daughter, working for Authentic Campaigns, a Biden-Harris-connected Democratic fundraising vehicle that is heavily involved in raising money for clients and fundraising off of her father's ongoing attempt to put Donald Trump in jail. So all of that failed, and this thing is going to get started today. And stepping back for a second and just saying, like, this is really it, folks. This indictment first dropped over a year ago now. There are four criminal prosecutions against Donald Trump. There is New York City. There's Georgia. Those are the two state cases. Then there were the two federal cases by special counsel Alvin Bragg in Florida and Washington, D.C. We told you all along on this show that this was the most likely by far to start first, to get out of the starting gate first. And it was the most likely by far to actually result in a verdict before November. Both of those two things happened to be true. Today begins jury selection, voir dire in New York City. They're going to sift through hundreds, potentially thousands of potential jurors. Simply sifting through jurors is going to take a very long time. The jurors are going to be asked out to fill out a form with questions ranging from the relatively straightforward and mundane, such as what jobs do they hold, to the more pointed and charged, such as whether they follow Donald Trump on social media, whether they belong to QAnon or the Proud Boys, other stuff like that. Here is how Justice Juan Merchan is going to explain the case to potential jurors. Here is how the judge is going to explain it himself. Quote, "The allegations are in substance that Donald Trump falsified business records to conceal an agreement with others to unlawfully influence the 2016 presidential election. Specifically, it is alleged that Donald Trump made or caused false business records to hide the true nature of payments made to Michael Cohen by characterizing them as payment for legal services rendered pursuant to a retainer agreement. The People allege that, in fact, the payments were intended to reimburse Michael Cohen for money he paid to Stephanie Clifford, also known as Stormy Daniels, in the weeks before the presidential election to prevent her from publicly revealing details about a past sexual encounter with Donald Trump." So, as we've explained on this show numerous times, but it's probably worth unpacking again, the actual legal argument here is a stretch on top of a stretch on top of a stretch. The actual legal argument is that on the precipice of the 2016 election, when Michael Cohen paid off Stormy Daniels roughly $130,000 to allegedly keep mum and not discuss past sexual encounters with Donald Trump, as she was threatening to do, the actual allegation is that the way that the Trump organization kept this in their bookkeeping as a matter of internal accounting, when they reimbursed Michael Cohen, Trump's longtime fixer, who himself is now an admitted perjurer who has been disbarred, he's been convicted and disbarred, but the allegation is that when the Trump organization reimbursed Michael Cohen for these payments, that they were fraudulently keeping books internally when they said that this was legal services. They were paying for legal services. Rather, Alvin Bragg's theory of the case is that this was actually an in-kind campaign election donation or an attempt to skirt around the campaign finance laws, because this was all done in the context of trying to boost Trump's chances in the 2016 election, because basically their theory of the case is that they didn't want Stormy Daniels to speak up. Now, again, there's just so many holes in this. First of all, the idea that Donald Trump would go out of his way to keep a porn star from speaking up is ludicrous. Have you ever seen Donald Trump's office at Trump Tower in New York City? Dude's got Playboy magazine covers all across the office. This is not exactly someone who has been, shall we say, coy about his marital relations, about his affairs, about his sexual relations, things like that. This is not exactly a man who is known for going to church daily and for taking kind of a very godly view of politics. He's not the kind of person who would feel a particularly compelling need to not talk about this. Of course, you had that whole Billy Bush video, you know, grab him by the you-know-what that kind of came out around the same time back there in October 2016. So it just doesn't even make sense on its own terms right there as well. Furthermore, fraudulent bookkeeping in New York State is a misdemeanor offense with a 2-year statute of limitations that told a while ago. So Alvin Bragg's theory as to how we can possibly get around this statute of limitations is totally ambiguous, but it seems to be the fact that this fraudulent bookkeeping charge is done in furtherance of X, in furtherance of a different charge, which seemingly is his way of trying to get around the statute of limitations issue while simultaneously hiking the misdemeanor to a felony. Now, the issue here, the major issue, among others, is that Alvin Bragg to this day has not actually told us what that felony is. He literally has not spelled it out to this day. Again, as I just intimated, we believe that it is an alleged violation of campaign finance laws, of election laws in New York City, but dude has not even told us yet. He hasn't even told us. And this legal theory is so discombobulated, is so shambolic, is so crazy that his far-left predecessor, Cy Vance Jr., declined to prosecute on these exact charges. Cy Vance Jr. very much looked into this, declined to prosecute on these charges. So did the feds, by the way. So did the the SDNY, the Southern District of New York, they similarly looked into this exact charge. They similarly decided that they were not going to ultimately pursue it there because they said that it was just too much of a stretch. There is way too much going on here. It is a far from straightforward case. It is a far from a lock. It is a misuse of prosecutorial resources. By the way, speaking of misuse of prosecutorial resources, what the heck is Alvin Bragg doing when it comes to prosecuting crime in New York City? He's going after Trump for this bookkeeping garbage from 2016. Meanwhile, shoplifting in New York City increased 64% in recent years. This is the guy who is not bringing the most basic charges when it comes to gangbanging. He's letting people out on bail. Alvin Bragg is an appalling disgrace to the American public. And hopefully the jurors, if Trump and his legal team are even able to get something even remotely resembling a fair jury pool, because once again, this is Manhattan, hopefully they can see through the fog and figure out what is actually going on here when it comes to Alvin Bragg and this blatant attempt at election interference. One other detail to bear in mind as we get underway here, just another reminder that Trump is facing a sprawling and arguably unconstitutional gag order in this particular case. There is a gag order that applies to virtually everyone involved in this case other than the judge, Juan Merchan, and the prosecutor, Alvin Bragg, themselves. The gag order applies to virtually everyone else, whether it's jurors, court staff, the family of Judge Merchan, including the compromised daughter, Lauren Merchan, all of that. So that is one other final detail as well to bear in mind as we get things started. But with all that said, let the games begin in New York City. It is a dark day for the American Republic. It is a point of no return. It brings me no particular joy or happiness to report that here we are. But we're in the news business, folks, and here we are, and we're going to have to report it as we see it. So we're going to be tracking this, of course, day in and day out on America on Trial here with Josh Hammer. That's it for today's deep dive. Up next in today's closing argument, huge news in the Middle East over the weekend. What happened and what's going to happen next? We've got it all for you when we come back.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back. It's time for today's closing argument. So, as we expected, as the Iranian regime all but telegraphed to the world, their response to Israel's, and to be fair, we don't actually know for certain that's Israel, but it all but certain was Israel, to Israel's assassination of a high-ranking IRGC Quds Force commander, a commander who was heavily involved in planning and executing the Hamas atrocities of October 7th, to say nothing of the murder of the three American soldiers, a Tower 22 American base in Jordan in late January. The Israelis took out this IRGC Quds Force commander in a building in Damascus, Syria, 2 weeks ago. This was a building that was described as a consulate. It really was not a consulate. It was a consulate the same way that Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza is actually a hospital. It has the entrapments of a building, but that is not what it is. It was a military base for the Iranians because Syria, like Lebanon, like Iraq, and like Yemen, is increasingly just an Iranian satrapy these days. In any event, Iran's response to this assassination finally came, and it was quite a response. It was an unprecedented response that was launched from inside the Islamic Republic itself. This was a very rare attack that was not actually launched by an Iranian proxy group, was not launched by Hezbollah in Lebanon, not launched by Kataib Hezbollah in Iraq, not launched by the Houthis in Yemen. No, this came from inside Iran itself. And the silver lining there is that the world has finally seen exactly who was calling the shots, who is the head of the snake in the Middle East there. It obviously is the Islamist fanatical terrorist regime in Tehran that has been causing so much trouble since they took over and replaced the Shah back in the revolution in 1979. Iran specifically launched 186 drones, 36 cruise missiles, and 110 surface-to-surface missiles coordinated from three separate fronts, primarily the Iranian home front, but also in coordinating with Hezbollah in Lebanon and the Houthis in Yemen. They were attempting to overwhelm Israel's missile defense system, and they failed. 99% of the drones and rockets and everything were intercepted. The overwhelming majority of them were intercepted short of Israeli airspace over Jordan, Saudi Arabia. Lots to unpack here. Jordan and the Saudis, by the way, both assisted Israel in taking down these drones and missiles. Extraordinarily encouraging sign from those two Arab countries. The U.S., the U.K., and France all assisted as well there. And overall, it went very well from an Israeli perspective, but this is obviously casus belli. This is obviously an international law, a declaration of war from the Iranian regime launching this kind of strike against another sovereign entity. And the question is going to come, what is going to happen next? Well, the Biden administration, predictably, the Biden administration, by the way, which apparently disgustingly gave the go-ahead for this attack. They passed along the message to Tehran via Ankara, via Turkey. They passed along a formal tacit, or not even perhaps tacit, but an actual sign of approval where they said, you can go ahead and issue this strike. The Biden administration predictably now is saying, oh, Israel, take the win. You got to win. Take the win. I'm sorry. In what world is it a win to suffer a strike, the likes of which we just described, with hundreds and hundreds of drones, ballistic missiles, cruise missiles? Are you out of your mind? This is not a win. This is not a win. I mean, what happens if you had missed one of those drones or missiles there? You're looking at hundreds, maybe thousands of dead civilians, again, just months after the October 7th Holocaust that Hamas perpetrated. The Biden administration at this point is not just hamstringing Israel. At this point, the Biden administration has come as far as you can possibly come to achieving the Obama-era grand goal for the Middle East, which is a goal that places mollycoddling the Islamic Republic at its very core and hamstringing and undermining Israel and our Sunni Arab allies at its very core as well. It is a disgustingly politicized election year stance that the Biden administration is taking. They are trying as hard as possible to win over jihadi and jihadi sympathetic votes in Dearborn, Michigan, and Minneapolis, Minnesota, and places like that. They are going to get their clocks cleaned with independent voters on this issue if this stuff keeps up. For now, all eyes are looking right now at Tel Aviv, I think, to see what is going to come next and what kind of response is going to come, because Israel's going to have to do something. They're going to have to do something to try to restore deterrence after this unprecedented attack from the Iranians. What is it going to be? Is it going to be just in Lebanon with Hezbollah? Are they going to go for the nuclear sites in Iran? We're looking at a lot of interesting stuff in the Middle East right now. And again, the United States, very simply, stand with our allies against our enemies. That really is it. It is not that much more difficult than that, folks. That's it for America on Trial with Josh Hammer today. Thanks, as always, for tuning in, folks. We'll be right back with you tomorrow morning.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.